You're listening to Around Comics, episode 253, brought to you by InStockTrades.com.
You belong to the gang, and you say you can't break away, but I'm here with my hands on my heart, and our families can't agree. I'm your brother's sworn enemy, but he shouts out my life.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, just like all of these folks, hey,
yeah,
drop on by.
We have Don't be shy, ladies.
We have people from Canada. We have people from... Nah, I don't know where you're from. We have people from... It is a multinational show tonight. So I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, as always, is the host of Tom vs. The Flash, among other things, Mr. Tom Caters.
I have nowhere else to be on a Friday.
Isn't it
you know what I
bad?
Did the last
gonna,
couple Fridays?
I'm so excited.
I just kind of sat at home. Sat at home and talked about comic books with my wife, and she was, when are you going to start recording again? That's what she said. She says, please go talk to your nerd friends.
Is that what you do with your wife?
No. I've learned over the years, the look on her face, it's the same look she gets when I start talking about like football or baseball, where it's just sort of like this... Like glazed over, like yes,
well, nice. A nod, and nice. Then walk into the other room.
Yeah, or like, oh, that's nice.
Isn't Project Runway on?
It is. It's on the DVR. So.
I've been watching it.
Yeah, I have too. What are you saying about people that watch Project Runway?
I like Project Runway. I watch Top Chef. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
When are we going to do a podcast about that?
Yeah. No. It would probably have more listeners, but
we should sort of change our track right now.
It's a perfect time coming off the vacation
to change format.
Okay, so now it's around Top Chef, but no, our next guest is a longtime friend of the show and DC exclusive artist, Mr. Mike Norton.
Hi,
how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well.
I haven't seen you since. Windy City?
It's been about a month, yeah.
It has. It's
well, been. That's probably the longest you guys have spent apart.
I know. That's why we came off of the break.
So no, Mike, I saw you in 24-Hour Comic Day.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, see, look.
And congratulations, by the way, for finishing your your awesome 24-Hour Comic.
I was going to say it was fun, but it was kind of hard to do.
Did your eyes swell up?
We were all watching out to see if my eyes would swell up. I was wearing the robe.
Yes. Yeah. He had the 24-Hour Comic podcast.
Have you ever done the 24-Hour Comic thing?
No. What's that robe about?
He has this bathrobe and slippers that he wears whenever he does anything more than 6 hours.
I got to be comfortable.
I understand, but you go out of the apartment like that?
Yeah, I was out on the. I walked over to the pizza place.
Wow, me even want to go buy cigarettes. I wore something,
a suit.
I had pants on. At least I pull my cape around myself or something.
Well, our last guest here is comic book a veteran of about, 12, 15 years now?
Actually, 21 years, but wow. Only since 92 in this country.
Okay.
In the States.
Currently, you can find his absolutely amazing ink work on Doug Monkey on the pages of Green Lantern. He is Mr. Christian Alame.
Yes, that's me.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'll never do anything else on Friday from now on.
This is it?
Yeah.
Our new regular Sal's out. Christian's in. Nice.
Yeah, didn't take much convincing.
I hear rumors that you're French. Is this true?
Yeah.
I was going to say, is that a New Jersey accent?
I'm also Greek, so I can introduce that show in Greek or in French, whichever you want.
Oh, if Suntris comes here, he'll...
Kalispera, sas. Edo imaste.
Suntris will be here.
Wow.
Suntris will be here.
Does Suntris know this?
That he's half Greek?
Yeah.
No, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. You guys, he's not going to let
sure
you go.
I'm sure his
Greek
radar will go off when he gets.
I'm sure it's like a plate over your head.
It's interesting. You'd have a new roommate. But Christian, first of all, welcome to Around Comics.
Thank you.
Welcome to Chicago. Because you just moved into the city in the last year or so, correct?
Almost 2 years ago now.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yeah.
I know every time that we've invited you to be on the show, you've always been like, yes, I'd love to come. And then a few days beforehand, it's like, oh, Doug's pencils are killing me. I'm under deadline.
Has Doug got you under his thumb, crushing you?
But no, the truth is, I don't really like Chris, so, you know.
See, but that doesn't stop Chris from continuing to try and get you.
Oh, yeah.
It's not true. I love Chris, but you know, like the status of you know, working on Blackest Night, I'm always between two private jets and all that stuff. So
You're being flown.
Yeah,
well, you need to do your inks in the Arctic Circle. We need to get you there.
On Jet Jones Airline.
We need to be on location, so it's off to OA for you. before we jump all the way in here, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. And if you like reading comics in trade format or collected editions, then InStockTrades.com should be your first destination on the internet. There you can find discounts from 37% to 47% off the cover price, and that's on everything from trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, showcases, essentials, omnibus editions, absolute editions, and more. Basically, if it is collected, it is at InStockTrades.com. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. And our long-awaited JLA Avengers Book Club episode is going to be coming out later this week. You can still pick that up at InStockTrades.com for 47% off the cover price. For $10.59, that trade can be yours. And I know that that episode will be coming out because Tom and I already recorded it.
We already did it.
We did it. So it'll look on your podcast feed later this week.
I like doing it before I recorded all the other stuff because I wasn't desperate to get away.
Yes. Yeah, it wasn't. It was good. Let's go.
I wasn't like, okay, let's get out of here. Let's go.
I think we may have stumbled upon a proper way of doing the book club episode.
Yep, proper.
So, yes.
So. Aren't you guys competitors?
Of what?
I don't know. He has a podcast too?
We compete with each other?
Yeah.
Well, I think I have an adversarial relationship with Chris.
It's
See, usually when we record the
I can see that.
When we record the Book of the Month, you're very insightful.
Yes.
when we record the book one, we always do it at the end, and by the end I'm just tired.
You're ready to go home.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm delicate.
Well, and now that Sal is gone, someone has to be my adversarial counterpart on the show.
Exactly.
So I'm expecting this from you. Okay, last point of order here. Music for this episode. Our good friend Ron Richards from iFanboy pointed out that
it's going to be like some sad music, isn't it? Like,
yes, it is. But Ron pointed out that my music catalog stopped at about 1994, and he was right. So I went on a search for some music that's been produced in the last 10 years. Anyway,
and you got the Beatles.
And, yeah, so it's the
There's
Beatles
new
remasters.
Band. They just came out with all their stuff.
No, I'm on a Decemberists kick right now, so I'm digging the Decemberists. So all the music for this episode will be by that band.
All right.
Okay.
Right. Tom Cater's stamp of approval.
That's all right. I mean, December is all right.
I got to come up with 52 of these a year.
52?
I don't either.
Yeah.
You okay? Well, you have to.
They abstain.
I'm not down with what the kids is listening to.
Yeah, it's think Death Cab for Cutie.
I don't know who's that.
No, wow.
I only listen to Lil Wayne.
I actually just found someone that's more musically inept than I am. This is awesome. Thank you.
But you're looking at the number one.
You were in a band.
I've heard of all these bands. But I just can't tell.
He's the number one
playing the triangle. Come on.
Yeah. He's the number one Lil Wayne bootleg trader, though.
I am. Yeah.
That's Mike's bootleg business. All right. Well, let's dive in here. We can talk a little bit about Christian's career.
Christian's been very insightful about us. Let's go to him. Let's turn the spotlight on him.
Go to the special guest. Well, Christian, we have talked several times, and you were kind enough to be at the Windy City Comic Con, which
thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you for coming. Thank you, Mike, for coming. Kyle Bice, who's here.
Oh, it was awesome.
Dave Mathis is in the house, and he was one of our photographers. Jose was one of our volunteers. But everyone out there that's listening that that came out to support the show, thank you so much. I'm not going to spend any time talking about it. If you want to hear a great recap, go to the 11 o'clock comics episode, and Jason Wood gave a great recap of the show.
Skip through all the crazy talk.
All the crazy talk and get right
to it. Oh, you're not. Oh, man. I don't think you're going to top all the psychotropic crap from this week.
Oh, that was awesome. But I
should really start listening.
But I would be remiss if I didn't thank all the support from the Around Comics community and all of our listeners. So thank you very much. And you'll be hearing about next year's show in a few months. So, Christian, thank you for coming to Windy City. And one of the things that I remember saying to you at some point during the day is that we wanted to have kind of a European art fair feel to the show.
Yeah.
And I think that you enjoyed your time there. But,
I did.
You grew up in France. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up as a comic book fan in Europe? I don't think that you had maybe the same kind of experience that Mike and Tom and I had growing up reading when we did. I think we're all about the same age.
Yeah. Well, except you guys are old.
No, yeah, it's true.
No, we're the same age. I'm probably younger than you, Chris, and older than Mike. I'm probably older than you too.
Yeah,
but
Chris is old.
Mike and I were born on the same day.
Oh yeah,
same hospital.
We are the same age, though.
Yes, we are.
You are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, Chris.
Well, hold on.
What happened?
The guy loses a little hair, and that's it. I'm growing a beard.
I'm just very young looking.
You are.
No, the experience is the same as here. I got like both. I grew up between American comics and European comics. So my oldest memories are like very distinct. One is like Tintin.
Which, yeah.
And
Belgian, right?
Yeah, Belgian. Mm-hmm. And the other one is like, I believe it's X-Men 4. So it would be a Jack Kirby thing. Jack Kirby picture. I remember the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And I did not know at the time that's what I had read. I had seen it at a friend's house when I was maybe 4 years old or something like that. And years later, as I was a teenager, I rediscovered like that what it was that I had carried, you know, as a memory all that time. So I grew up like reading more mostly like all the great guys from the 70s and Bilal, Moebius, and all these guys, Hugo Pratt. And comic books at the same time, I discovered like I was reading them in French at first, like in a magazine called Strange. Mm-hmm. And one day when I was 12, a friend of mine told me he found a store in Paris that had like actual American comics. So from there on, I was hooked, and I grew up literally with both.
Were they in English or in French?
Yeah, in English. Like they were importing them. They would have them like come at the store like on Wednesdays, just like here. Like same thing exactly. As like this here where we are right now, it could be one of these stores in France. Basically, that's exactly the same thing.
Wow.
So I really grew up between both, and I always thought it was an advantage. Same way I thought it was like speaking another language is an advantage. I kind of was fed by all that stuff, and it was cool.
How do you think that changed your approach to doing art? As far as you said, you had an advantage.
It complicated it in some ways. Like I remember when I was first working for DC Comics, I had it in mind to be kind of like to expose them to my Moebius style.
Oh,
like
okay.
Whatever. You know yeah. what I mean? It's like I'm gonna teach them how it's done and all that. And in fact, I was actually swept away by like all the American school, like even more than I was before.
Yeah.
And I can't really say. To me, it was always natural.
Somebody just what
draws
you did.
Something. I mean, when you read something, you don't care where the guy is from. You just like look at what he's doing. You right. like it or you
so
don't.
So it just sort of came out from, you know.
I guess so. I'm sure somewhere like when I draw, like, you know, it may come out like in a way or another. But there is no like conscious thought behind it.
Now, growing up, I think everybody had, you know, their guy, their art guy that they sought out. I think for Mike and I, it was Byrne. Yeah. I mean, that was our guy, you know, growing up. It was, you know, 1986. It was hard to get away from from John Byrne and how awesome he was. Tom, and I never knew who your guy was growing up.
I never had much of a guy. I really liked Perez when I in the 80s. It's probably the closest
the
that I got.
The DC John Byrne.
Yeah, well, kind of. Well, I mean,
it was the X-Men versus Teen Titans, you know, that was just...
to me, I never had like a single guy that I ever thought that I just followed, you know, like whatever they did. But I also think when I was a kid, I'm only 30, like in the mid 80s, I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I didn't even think, I thought it was journalism. I didn't know people were making the stories up. You know, like I didn't know who drew. Yeah,
there's
I didn't
some
know
shit going down on Owen.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't, you know, that's the thing when you're a kid, you don't think like someone's making these. You just know that that they're showing up. And then as you get a little bit older, you start to pick out stuff that you like, you know. And
youth
like,
is wasting on the young with you, huh?
Yeah.
Well, how about you, Christian? Who is your guy, either European or American?
I started with John Byrne, I guess, also, probably like around 1980 or 81, like when I discovered his X-Men, first in French, and they were 2 years later. So I discovered them pretty much at the time he stopped doing them, actually, except it was like translated later.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I came into X-Men around the
big shock that defined like all my teenage years and like up to later was Moebius, especially under his like real name, Jean Giraud, when he does Blueberry and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You guys should see the French editions when it's not on glossy paper, when it's really on matte paper and all that. I grew up with that stuff. That's beautiful. From there on, like, at the same time, I was discovering right after Byrne, I was going back further back and, like, Wrightson and especially Neil Adams, like everybody else, I was just blown away by him. Even probably was 10 years later, I was just blown away by him. I actually met him, like, a few years ago when I... 2005 or something like that, I was invited to the Batman Begins premiere in New York. Yeah. And I sat right next to him in the theater watching Batman with Neil Adams.
That's pretty
just
cool.
Unbelievable.
There you go, yeah.
Just like, I mean, wow. I was too shy at the time. I didn't really speak to him. I was too ill. That's another story. And then came another very influential artist for me is Hugo Pratt, who's not as well known in the States, like who did Corto Maltese, obviously, and a lot of other stories. And the guy was a living legend. I managed to meet him twice when I was young, and that left me great memories. He died sadly, like I believe back in '95, and that's pretty much the guys, like from John Byrne to Neil Adams, from Moebius to Hugo Pratt. Like these are really the defining guys for me, which are in many ways classic guys. Then there's also all the guys like everybody admires, like later in their careers, there's lots of great artists out there. Like, I mean, you look at Adam Hughes, you're like, wow, you know, you like so many other guys who are like great.
So I was going to ask you, in reading, you said that you'd read the X-Men comics in both French and English.
Yeah.
Did you know, was there like a big... Was something lost? I'm always curious about someone who's read something translated.
It was lost, basically, it was lost in English because, like, you guys did not know that Wolverine's real name is Serval.
The French version's got all, like, listen, there's no mystery to Wolverine in the French version.
Hey,
like,
that's the one I read first. That's the right one, okay?
So in your head, you'll always think that that's
Nightcrawler was called Diablo.
Nice.
So when you were a kid, you read the French version first.
Yeah.
So in your head, those are the versions. And then, like, do you remember like reading the English comics and being like, "Who the fuck is Nightcrawler?" Like,
yeah. Exactly. It took me a little while. I was like, "Okay, who's that guy?" He's like, "Well, he's talking to him, so it's got to be him." Okay. I was like, "Nightcrawler. Okay, yeah, I get you, Nightcrawler. There's Wolverine, and Storm, and Cyclops, and the Professor Xavier." And so I just like basically like worked my way through it like that. I realized, however, that like the French comics were at the time there was censorship.
Oh, okay.
Even though violence was not as prevalent as it is now in comics, like I remember, you remember that issue where like a Wolverine is gutting like some guys like from the Hellfire Club?
Yeah,
that would be issue 132.
Oh, somewhere around that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So they had like actually
Wolverine Strikes Back.
Yeah,
it's my turn now.
Well, I can really tell the nerds around here, just like, and so there was no blood or guts like coming out, like nothing. It was just clean, a clean strike. with nothing, I guess. Just punched him.
I was a super confused kid when I was... The first exposure I got to comic books was I got a bunch of old DC comics from, like, the 70s, which were, like, a mix of reprints and stuff. And I read them, and I was, like, 6 or 7 at the time, and I didn't understand the concept of reprints. You know, they were just books
right,
to me.
Yeah.
So, like, I read them, and then I was like, oh, I'm really... So I picked up stuff that had been coming out currently, you know, the tone. I mean, we're talking about a book from I read in, that came from like a reprint from 1968, and then I picked up a book from 1985, and I was like seven, and I was
that
like,
happened with me
like
and Marvel,
twisted my whole head around because I was like,
well,
I
thank God for reprints and trades and all that. That allows, like, especially now, a whole generation, like, where would they find, like, I don't know, like, even that Burn stuff we're talking about the X-Men. There's no other way to read them. Like, no,
I always thought I was sort of lucky that I read stuff that way because I always really. Like, my first exposure to stuff was actually stuff that was probably 10 years older than I was, but I had a huge box of this stuff, and I was reading it. It wasn't until a couple years later where I started piecing together, like...
Gaining an appreciation, too, because, I mean,
I was confused. I was the most confused kid on earth.
I was, too. I mean, I was reading... Ron Frenz was drawing Spider-Man at the time. This is way back in the 80s, and they had Marvel Tales, which was the Ditko stuff.
Yeah.
And I was reading that Ron Frenz Spider-Man, which was current. He's like, oh, Mary Jane knows who I am, all that stuff. And then I get Spider-Man versus Molten Man, and it looks like, in my teenage eyes, like crap. I'm like, what is this crap?
Yeah.
And then later, I mean, that's the guy who made Spider-Man, dumbass.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, shit, Ditko's awesome. But same thing with me with the X-Men. I mean, that was my book after I came in with Doctor Who and then, you know, discovered the X-Men. Loved the Byrne Claremont and had started reading the Paul Smith and Claremont, of course. And then found the Roy Thomas Neil Adams, which just looks beautiful. And
very confusing storytelling, though.
But, you know, I think to my 13 or 14 year old mind, I was okay with that.
Everything is awesome here. To a 13, 14. That's why all the art that everybody gives Image a bad rap for now was so and still is so popular.
Oh, absolutely.
It has nothing to do with storytelling.
No,
it
has
everything
finds
to do with
through the story.
Awesomeness.
Yeah. True. I mean, getting older, I realize that I tend to go for, like, the so-called realistic approach, or, like, things like that. Is it really good for when it comes to superhero comics? I don't know. It might be a big mistake on my part. It's just like who I am, like everybody else getting older. But we forget that as a teenager, anything works. I mean, like, that just, like, well, the bigger, the better, actually. You're just like,
has to be a coolness factor to it. Sometimes that can be very simple. Yeah.
Superheroes, to begin with, are just about, like, some kind of melting pot of various, like, mythologies and religious concepts with a few aliens in it. You shake all that and you put some kick-ass action in it. It's again, almost ridiculous and great concept at the same time. It's just brilliant. And I realize that I have to remember that sometimes. And it still works sometimes. For example, like, when I read some stuff, thankfully, sometimes it still works on me even today. You know,
You can still get lost a little bit in the stuff occasionally. Yeah. You can be
usually it's easier for me when I get back to the old issues I used to read because there's like an affective memory working here as well. But the stuff we're working on now with Geoff Johns, I know that it's that kind of stuff, that kind of like a really cool action stuff that's kind of like, oh, wow, you know, that's crazy.
There's a big 12-year-old in Geoff Johns that's behind a lot of that.
He awakes the one in me, which is good. That's
It really is interesting how he's able to distill that because I don't see that much. I mean, it's beyond being a good writer. There's something he's able to capture that I don't get in other great writers.
Yeah,
I think I was thinking about that today while working. Actually, I think he made new with old.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple. He went back to the roots of the Silver Age, like, which is basically for Green Lantern, Flash, and all that. It's really the 60s that were like the high point. And he goes back to the root, all the stuff we thought was ridiculous, like in Superman, Crypto the dog and all that stuff. Everybody wanted to get rid of that kind of thing. he embraces it because he likes it, and it's genuine love, you know. Like, so he brings back all these concepts, but his real talent is that he makes that with an absolute modern approach to writing.
That issue of Adventure Comics that came out this week, that Francis Mama, it was like when you were saying about being like a 12-year-old, I was like, you, that was so good in the sense that you could completely, I completely forgot, like, you know, what, you know, like, instead of being like, oh, how far into this story arc is it? I was like, oh, that's, was really, you know, a nice story, and it was very, and it had crypto in it, which if you look, if someone described crypto to you outside, it's stupid.
I had to do that. I was sitting, you know, I've got this chair in the living room that I read comics in, and Marta's usually, you know, watching TV or reading a book, and I started giggling, and Marta's like, what? And I was like, ah, Crypto just rounded up all the Superboy's villains and brought them to him in Smallville. And she's like, whatever.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. But
why do you want to eat tonight?
No, it's what are you cooking?
What are you cooking?
Is the question. Ooh, or so
you don't tame her well?
No.
Put down your comic books, Chris.
I'm wearing jeans now, but I wear a skirt at home, Christian.
I got to teach you a few things from France.
But that's, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit.
I hope Michelle can't hear that someday on our
computer. Just don't let her near the computer.
They call this late pimp slap.
But it's like the same thing within Green Lantern, like the idea of like all the different colors meaning things is sort of childish, but it works. Like, you know, it's like the simplest kid thing is like, this color means this, you know?
Exactly. These are like primary emotions. Like, there is psychology behind colors. Several people have written about that, and it's very simple. Yeah. It's like the old principle of like heroes have like primary colors, and like villains have like secondary and tertiary colors, and the whole thing. I think the most important thing, I'm sorry, that defines Jeff's success is he has no cynicism whatsoever. And we're all like, you know, adults, I guess we're all cynical in some ways, and it transpires into the work at times, not with him. And I think that's a key to his success. He has a true love for the characters, no cynicism, and a great talent to go with it. And that's what brings all these great stories out. He makes me think in some ways, I think he's the writing equivalent to what Alex Ross did not so long ago. With the artwork, it worked so well, not, in my opinion, so much because he's a great painter and technical, you know, great artist, but because he loves these characters. And whatever is considered cheesy by many, to him, is absolutely stunning. And he brings it with absolute genuine compassion on the page, and it works. You can't resist that stuff. I mean, it's cheesy to say, but love beats all.
He made Captain Marvel look iconic.
Exactly.
And look very powerful.
I also think
dynamic.
He redefined the, for me at least, like the Superman iconic stature.
Yeah.
When I think of Superman in ways of an icon, he managed to tap into the unconscious Superman that was floating out there, like for all of us, going back to the roots a bit, and he gave it a face. He gave it like a presence.
Maybe like, yeah, because it's his Superman evokes a little bit of like, because always to me, like always the problem with the imagery of Superman is you don't want him to be dad, but you don't want him to be brother either. He's got to be like in between. He's got to be like a little older than you, but not equivalent to you, because he's still got to, you know, but there's a little bit of that burn Superman to it, a little bit of like the struggle to it.
That's like the leading man in 50s movies. Yeah. Like the guys were like in their mid-50s at least, you know, like kissing an 18-year-old girl. So that without getting in there, it's like he has to be a man, and a man defined like I guess like on screen, like that's the difference between a guy like Brad Pitt, whom I really like, and say George Clooney or Daniel Craig, who look more manly.
Right.
Yeah, there has to be a certain.
You know who else I liked in that same sense though? I love Frank Quitely's Superman.
Oh, I love him too.
Because it's
different, but
it's different, but it still has that same in a different way in that. It's like a the broad-shouldered, like big, not necessarily muscly, but like a touch of like daddish, but like more older brotherish than you know, not like this sculpted sort of.
And I love Frank Whiteley's work to begin with. He's just like he's the most European of artists working in the States by far. I'm not talking about like where he's from.
Yeah,
I'm talking about his style.
Yeah. It's his Batman and Robin stuff has been, you know, those three issues he did were incredible. But I mean, I love his Superman, and like in a totally different way from the Alex Ross one, because I kind of like the thing with Alex Ross that's funny is I love the way the Superman costume looks on Superman with Alex Ross, but it's funny because it doesn't work for all the characters. Like,
no,
the Flash one,
it'll make you realize how ridiculous a costume looks on somebody by looking at an Alex Ross.
But for some reason, the Superman one looks okay, but some of them don't quite, like, it works with the Superman one.
That Superman costume, the costume is like that. I mean, you look at the costume on Christopher Reeve and you're like, yeah. Dude can walk around in his underwear.
It's a good call. Yeah,
you look at it on what's his face. You see it on Dean Cain, and you're just like, okay. Halloween party?
Because Superman, it's like he's got no costume. He's a man beneath the costume that defines it. Christopher Reeve could wear it, and it's like it was dignified.
Yeah.
How can you pull that? I mean, you wear that at a Halloween party. You look ridiculous.
Seriously,
Christopher Reeve looks awesome.
You watch that movie, and you're like, yeah, there's nothing stupid about wearing that.
No. Yeah, but the thing
was, it's completely stupid. It's a dumb costume.
The first Superman movie to me is still one of the best superhero movies. Well, I
was going to bring that up when we were talking about Johns, because everything I've read of Johns, it seems like, especially the Superman stuff, it's like that movie never ended. You know, it just keeps going.
But he was Richard Donner's assistant, I think, when he
started. Well, it makes sense, obviously. But I mean, it's like he's able to keep what was so great about that stuff and keep it going. It's just like, I love reading Superman because it's just like that movie never ended.
The cool thing about the Christopher Reeve Superman, too, it combined, because he has a sense of humor, but it's not like the mean 60s Superman that would be like, I'm going to pull a trick on you. You know, it's like he jokes around. He's human.
That Superman scarred you, because you always talked about the evil tricks that he played on Lois.
I mean, like the 60s Superman.
He would slap Lois.
I wanted to ask you, thank you. As a kid growing up in France, if you wanted to buy back issues, like if you were interested in reading back issues and stuff, was that available? Like, could you go get an old X-Men comic if you were?
Yeah, I could actually. Not only comics, but even pages. I used to own, when I was like maybe 16, I bought like a John Byrne page original from the X-Men. I bought like a Kirby page from X-Men 10. I remember that one. That was the one with the Stranger. Was that 10? Yeah, must have been 10. And I had these pages, which I paid like $200 at the time. For each of the equivalent in francs. It was very expensive. I saved like a whole summer like working to get these.
Then you told me the sad end of the story.
Yeah, when I was 18, like about, or 19. Yeah, 18, I think. Like, no,
needed
I must have bought
money.
Them like earlier when I was 14. And I just needed to get out with girls. I was broke, so I sold them for what I paid for them. When I see on eBay what this kind of stuff goes for now, I'm like, oh, God.
That girl was not worth that.
Oh, no. So what was her name again? Jesus, I can't even remember. Damn you.
You still remember those Kirby pages.
She owes me original pages from Burning Kirby.
Bitch. You bitch. Well, you had told me before we started recording, you had a great Harvey Kurtzman story.
Back in 1989, I was working before I came here. I worked for a French publisher. I did one of those, French graphic novels, which there's no comics in France. It's all like hardcover and stuff. And there was like a huge convention that started in the town of Grenoble. It's at the feet of the Alps in France, beautiful town. And they wanted to basically compete with the main convention in France, which is Angoulême, very well known. And so they started, it was a political matter, actually. The ex-guy from Angoulême created that one, hoping to, you know, like, make competition for his old, I mean, it just like some...
Yeah, we've got that going on in the United States right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. But anyway, this convention didn't last. But the first one was brilliant. We had, like, that's when I met Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, who were working for my French publisher. Watchmen was translated by them, and they did original work on Watchmen for my publisher. And we got on there, and like one of the evenings was, we had like one of those, like, how do you call that thing that takes you up the mountain, like that suspended
gondola?
Yeah, that's called a gondola.
Taking everybody from comics into a private restaurant high up the Alps for the evening. And Harvey Kurtzman was there. He was like really old at that time, and he was already ill, I believe. I believe he had Parkinson's. I mean, he was shaking. And people were telling us, listen, don't go bother him because he won't do any drawings for you. He's like, you know, here with his family. It's just, they had paid a homage to him, like during the convention. It was dedicated to him. And I was just going to ask for a signature, which he was doing happily after the dinner. And TV cameras were there. And he took my piece of paper and did a drawing for it because the TV cameras were there. So I have like the last drawing I believe Kurtzman did for anyone, like in such a setting, which was nice.
That's awesome.
That's
kind
of awesome.
What did he draw?
He drew Annie's boob, which he used to do like very often. It's just right. A perfect curve.
And
like,
perfect. And he knew how to draw that.
Hey, man, if you're going to get a Kurtzman sketch, that's what you're going to get.
I've been enjoying your work with Doug Monkey on Green Lantern, and I also enjoyed it in Final Crisis, actually, in the one issue that that you guys did. Is there something between you two that works really well? Because I've always enjoyed his pencils, but with your inks, I think it's awesome. It's amazing when you guys are working together.
Thank you. That's I love working with Doug. It's been a very long time, and I've been doing that for a long time. Since I enjoyed myself so much, even though it's very hard, like time-wise, deadlines are crazy. But I just like Doug. I like him. I like his work. He's really the strongest artist out there. And as Mike was pointing out before, like literally, because
in real life,
he's a weightlifter. I think he had a competition like last week.
Do he and Tom Nguyen, do they like have like posing contests? Because
it's both
workout buddies.
Tom was like a bodybuilder, like he was like a professional bodybuilder
because,
for a while.
Because they live in the same town. They both live in Minneapolis.
And Doug is a weightlifter champion. I think he's like Minnesota's champion or something. You can find it online. It's just like
what a weird.
And he draws all that stuff, and he's got 7 kids, and he's crazy. I mean, Doug is a fucking robot. I don't know where he comes from. I know where he comes from. He's half Greek, actually, which is one of the links we have. Except he looks like a German robot.
That's just Jeff Johns gives stuff to me, and I draw it. I'm a German drawing robot.
It's unbelievable. I mean, Doug surprises me, and his artwork. I remember like the. Back in the days, like Dan Raspler, who was like a good friend and my editor at the time, back in the 90s, one day he comes to me, he's like, check this out. And he gave me like that major bummer, like issues. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that guy's good. You know, it's like, holy shit, he's full of details.
Well, his Obsidian Age stuff in the JLA, I loved.
And then I've been following like what he had been doing. And about like... 3 years ago, two, three years ago, I was recovering from a disease. I was back in France and I was calling Peter Tomasi, was still an editor at DC at the time. Like, Pete, you need to find me some work. I need to get back into the business. And he was like, yeah, I don't know, there's not much going on and all that. I'm like, come on, Pete, you know. And he's like, how about Doug Monkey? You like Doug Monkey? I'm like, sure.
You played it cool. Well, you were like, yeah, I guess that's all right.
He's like, I just drew, I just wrote like this series, like Black Adam with him and all that.
So
we started to work together and it worked well. So we remained together. The truth is like, I understand Doug's drawing because he comes from the same place, I guess, I do when I draw, although he does it better in many ways, and it's different. But there's a commonality. And since I always inked myself and I've been inking other people like for a while, it just seemed natural. As soon as I saw his pencil, I was like, oh, I can do that guy. Like totally. It's like, it's just like perfect.
Well,
And we've been working. Everybody was like enthusiastic about it. So that's why we have stayed together and we continue to work together. And I believe it's one of these cases where sometimes, as much as I like his own inks when he inks himself, personally, in some ways, I prefer them, actually. They're more him and, like, really, like, the core of his true talent. There's sometimes a combination creates a third entity, which is really nice, too, which is like a third person in the room. Mm-hmm. And people react to that a lot. And so it's good for both of us, and it's very enjoyable. On a more personal level, Doug is also someone I really like. We go along; it's the easiest like thing in the world. It's very natural. Yeah. There's no like.
Well, when I walked past your table at the Windy City Comic Con, I saw some Green Lantern pages out, and the page with and looking at those pages, like in just
you started thinking, I was like, how can I sneak this past my wife?
I was like.
I can give you a discount if you want.
there was
Let's
some
talk
gore,
after the show.
there's some gorgeous stuff in there. And far as from like the artistic viewpoint of doing Green Lantern, is it intimidating having to tackle that many characters? Because that's a book that's it's not busy in a bad way, but it's packed. It's a packed book.
I only get intimidated when I draw because then I get really scared. When I ink, never.
Yeah.
And since I mostly ink nowadays, like the only thing intimidating is like, oh God, when am I gonna be done with that? You know, it's just it's like the nightmare of the deadline.
This is a jam-packed book. That's a book. Yeah, like every page.
Not only that,
the
subject of the whole Blackest Night event is like just crazy. You get a lot of characters going around like all over the place, and Green Lantern is like that to begin with.
Yeah.
Then we have like extremely tight deadlines on top of that. Like, I know Doug's been like also feeling the same thing. We're really like pressed for time. In the past issue, I did only 8 pages. I mean, I was dealing with a personal issue at the same time, but still, 8 pages out of a comic book. I couldn't do more. We barely had 2 weeks, and most of my time was taken out like with something else. We are, for the same reason, like we're right now working on issue 48. We're not going to do 49. We're going to skip directly to issue 50, which is going to be oversized. So we can do the whole issue. And I believe Ed Benes is going to do issue 49.
Okay.
We made that we came to that decision because we just couldn't like take it reasonably. Like we need a small breathing time. We're suffering a bit of a burnout right now.
Oh, I can understand. I mean,
and we don't want the work to suffer, especially Doug. Doug is like uncompromising when it comes
like,
to that.
Looking at his stuff. Man, his stuff looks tight, like in the sense that like he's not the type of guy who is gonna like get loose with how he's doing stuff. I mean, one of my favorite issues art wise was the that Final Crisis issue. Mm-hmm.
I only inked 5 pages out of that.
I loved that stuff inside the Final Crisis. I thought it was
the last issue of Final Crisis.
And Beyond Doug, was awesome as well.
Is Doug being pressed at the worst, basically. Yeah. I mean, he told me it took him a long time like to recover from that. He wouldn't sleep. He would just like do the whole thing. He just didn't want to pass out the opportunity. And he's the kind of guy, once he said he would do it,
he does it.
That's it. There's no like... That's Doug being rushed, basically Doug doing his worst, and I put like quotation
air
marks
quotes.
Here, air quotes, because you look at it and you're like, wait a minute, how's that different? Just like, how does he do it? I don't know. I know one thing. We have a project we've been working on like for a long time together. It's a Joker story. It's a 64-page story written by Keith Champagne. It's an excellent story. It's called Joker Year One. And I don't know when it's going to come out. I have no idea if it ever will. We've done 20 pages so far, and we started them like back in early 2008. And that stuff looks beautiful because we both really had time. we took our time, like you wouldn't believe.
I would love to see that.
But then
Joker.
We started to work on finally the call for Final Crisis and Green Lantern and all that. And so we have no idea when we'll be able to finish it. We both say like we want to finish it at some point.
You know,
because
that,
we like it, but that's
that gets me really well. Now I'm going to be excited because what reminds me of the best stuff, the stuff that you guys have done together, that reminds me of the really great Brian Bolland stuff that I've loved in a way. Like there's a touch of that. There's a touch of that to that. The like the Green Lantern stuff, like the prologue issue. The pages I saw were of Black Hand shooting himself, like the big full page. That whole issue reminded me a lot
that page
of Brian
was mine. I sold it for good money.
looking at those pages, I was really reminded a lot of Brian Bolland stuff that I loved a lot, and that it's so precise, but also like it's not sort of completely robotic.
You know,
it's not
over rendered.
Yeah, it's like
there's a tricky thing with Doug, like every good artist. What you see or what you think you see is not what you're seeing. Actually, Doug is not as precise as you think he is. He's a very organic, very spontaneous artist. Yeah. And he's so good at it. He manages to control so much. And he's not a guy who works with references, photographic references and all that. He just has like this capacity to recreate so much and infuse so much life and action into it that's really stunning. And in fact, it's far looser than you think it is, except he just manages you to convince
That's
you.
That's just how it looks.
He just manages to convince you otherwise. He's like, he just suggests things, but so beautifully that it's all there. It's really something.
Does that kill you as an anchor?
Because the way I work with him, like we were speaking with Mike about that like earlier. I try to when he inks himself, he inks himself in a rough way. He just draws as he inks. Mm-hmm. When I ink myself, I tend to go the same way. But when I ink him, I have to go sleek because it's so appealing. You know, oh, let's do that. Like,
did
let's
he
make
ink
it. It takes forever.
On Team Zero, was that?
I think so.
I don't know, actually. I think, I think he did.
Because that's a different looking Doug Monkey than what you're
in the last Green Lantern issues. Also, there's three inkers usually. It's like Doug, Tom Nguyen, and myself. Tom Nguyen and I now have a style which like could pass like almost similar, like we can blend in very easily. Mm-hmm. You can still tell Doug when inks himself, there's a bit of a rougher edge, but overall we managed to make issues. I haven't heard anyone complain.
No,
about
it's tight. It's tight.
And
I could tell when it was Tom and not you, but just because I was looking for it. You guys have a style that works well together.
As someone, I mean, you started, you know, you penciled for a while.
For most of your career. I'm so slow that it's not viable for me. I'm just tired.
To switch to like an inker, how does your mentality change towards looking at stuff?
I always inked myself. I used to also paint. I was an illustrator for a long time. Yeah. I worked for magazines, book covers, like what have you. At first, when I was younger, when I was like in my early 20s, I was thinking, oh, inking, oh no, it's beneath me. I had a bit of an ego problem at the time. And getting older and after starving for a while, the ego like goes away like pretty fast and you get a little wiser. And I thought, no, you know, inking is a good gig. It's something I can do on time. It's something I can do well, and it pays the bills. So that there was no question. It don't last very long, and I'm actually enjoying doing that, like with Doug a lot, because I know we're doing something good. Like we're doing a good comic book, the kind of stuff that stays, I believe, you know, like in the mind of people, or at least I hope so. And as for myself, sure, I'd like to draw something at some point, but it would have to be something that like I can take the time to do on my own terms. And, you know, you will hear that like often from people who don't get to draw. Like, for example, Mike, like he draws like, I don't know, he does it. He was doing that like, for such a long time, about like 40 pages a month, something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm like, it looks great. I'm like, how the fuck do you do that?
Here's an interesting thing. Okay.
And I see the rare times I get out, because I never get to get out just inking, I see him, he walks around with his fucking sandwich. He goes like to the comic book store. He's like,
I don't always have a sandwich.
Pretends he's,
he pretends he's coming back from the gym. So if it's true, it's even worse. That means he even has time to work out and all. And he looks it too.
Like, it's just like, and you know, it's interesting that you say that. It's interesting that you say that you.
Okay, that was just from today.
But I guess this is more of this is
better than the
complicated. Yeah, complicated. In saying that you need to take your time in penciling something, like, what is the factor in seeing like different people's art that you think takes a long time? Is it that first step that takes a long time? Is it the figuring out where things go? Like, that to me, as someone who's not very artistic, that's the most interesting thing to me, is like, what's the thing that is the hardest move?
It's a bit of everything. I never worked on a monthly series. Yeah. I was offered a lot of stuff when I first came. I turned it down mostly because I knew I couldn't like hold like a monthly rhythm. Yeah. That's why I'm always surprised by guys like Mike and all that. I'm like, how the hell do they do it? I'm extremely uncompromising when it comes to artwork. Strangely, in every other aspect of my life, I've learned like to compromise.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the last step I need to learn. Just rely more on my experience and let go a little.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, it's like it's plagued me. It's like as soon as you do something, I just want to erase it and do it over.
Yeah.
And when I was under contract, many times I messed up projects that way, because for me, like the paycheck or like the deadline or the contract were not important. I'm like, screw it.
You just wanted to look the way that
in your head. I put myself in a lot of trouble at some point. I was blacklisted almost. And thank God for like a few editors who were still friendly to me and all that. I managed to get back on my feet.
Yeah.
And I realized it's basically fear-driven, let's be honest. So I, with inkings always was secondary to me. So I always thought it came easier. And
has it changed you? Because you said earlier that originally you had thought of inking as sort of beneath you, and like
I was young. I mean,
yeah, like, when you were young, and after having inked for a while, how has that changed you know your viewpoint from when you were younger to what inkers add to art?
When I started inking seriously, I mean, I used to do it when I was drawing too, like every now and then, like but when I started doing it on a more regular basis, that was first with Patrick Leeson.
Another good Green Lantern artist.
But Tom Nguyen is the primary inker for Patrick now, isn't he?
Yeah, actually, we switched somehow. It's when I was ill, like Tom got onto Patrick's work. I don't know, he just got switched somehow. And I did like some of the first works Patrick did for like DC Comics. And we started to work on Aquaman together. Like we had quite a little run there. Yeah. That was good, and I really enjoyed it. And I was also the inker originally for Green Lantern Corps when it started, like with a reboot.
Recharge.
And Recharge. And that's when I got ill. I had like to step away from the business for 3 years. And like, and when I came back, obviously, like you can't go back. Hey, give me back my job. That's not how it works. And plus, I was happy to see that Tom was like working. You know, Tom's a great friend. He's like one of the most fun guys you can hang out with.
He's a good guy. And, lots of girls in bikinis whenever Tom Nguyen is around.
Hey, I was going to ask you, Mike. You know, I asked Christian about, like, as someone who's not artistic, when I think about drawing, I always think, what's the thing that's the biggest hurdle? Like, is it the first mark that you make? Is it, like, after you figured out where everything goes and trying to, you know, perfect it? And to me, it's always fascinating to hear people talk about, what is the thing that's the hardest? What's the moment that's the hardest moment?
When you're drawing, it's like it is the planning part of the layout stage where you're trying to figure out. It's the puzzle solving. It's a big game of Tetris at that point.
Yeah,
you're just trying to figure out where to put everything and how to make it work. After that, it is all pretty much academic, and it's actually pretty. Like, if I do all these layouts, now my process is I do a lot of layouts on the computer, and I'll print it out in Blue Line, and I'll finish it up in pencil. That part, the finishing up in pencil, it's very zen-like, because I know where all the lines go.
Cathartic.
I'm just tightening it up. It's just a time involved now.
That's great. I'm so jealous. That's how I feel when I ink, actually. But, like, when I draw, that's the absolute opposite. I was always, like, it's a matter of pride with me, and stupid pride, not anything good. since I was young, like I do when I ink or like when I used to draw, was like, it's got to come spontaneously to me. Otherwise, I reject it, like, totally. So I never did build my work the way I should do. I never laid out properly. I never make the right decisions before. I just expect it to come out, like, immediately and first draft. And, of course, it doesn't, or at least 99% of the time it doesn't. Every now and then you get, like, lucky. But and so I reject all that, and I complicate my life, like, endlessly because of that. I never learned, actually, to draw with a method. I mean, with a working method. That's what I'm talking about, not like
a functional
method.
Yeah.
Which I've learned for everything else, painting, like inking and all that. So like the drawing, no, I'm still like, or last time I did it, I was still like too uncompromising for that. And that's where I have to learn. I'm so, I mean, Mike has got like a perfect working method, and it just like it works every time. Look at what he does; it's just beautiful. And it comes out like boom on time. And
I don't know about you, but I could stand to look at Mike's art inked by Bill Sienkiewicz for like pretty much forever.
It's nice.
I'm pretty psyched
about it. Yeah,
yeah, it's awesome looking at your stuff. Because if I've said it before, but the one thing. Like it's like the perfect melding of two things, you know. Like you are a solid storyteller, and Sienkiewicz is a little like crazy with where he puts stuff.
I haven't seen it yet.
Here, I'll show you.
There's I'll go get one.
I like it. I dig it. I dig it. But it's funny because whenever I hear people talk about like inking or penciling, I'm like I work in the least artistic field of all time. Like I'm an accountant. So it's always
well, you
funny
know what
to
you hear. Like though.
Yeah, and it's always fun. I always like hearing
how
about
much do you charge for taxes?
A lot. I charge a lot.
I think I've asked him
more than 150 bucks.
Yeah.
Well, you're a crook.
It's easy because Green Arrow is right by Green Lantern, so I can find Christian's work and Mike's right next to each other. Yeah, it's Mike inked by Sienkiewicz.
Yeah, no, but you said Green Arrow is raped by Green Lantern.
No, right by.
Raped.
That's next issue.
No.
Their friendship takes a turn for the worse.
It just went blue.
It looks great. It looks beautiful because Sienkiewicz is a guy who really can draw. There's no question. And the guy can draw in his sleep.
Yeah.
I would love to. I mean, it looks beautiful. I would love to see what the pencils look like and see if Sienkiewicz like paid any attention to
them
or not.
I'll show them to you. He does. He actually, it's a lot closer than you think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. I'll so he just ends like he's a gritty.
He has
finish.
A lot of the grit and a lot more of the just. I don't want to say random black areas.
I still recognize
they are there for a reason, but
I still recognize you. But it's like you guys had like an illegitimate son or something.
That's what I like about it. I like illegitimate sons.
And then I tell you, I loved watching you go on the 24-hour comics day to see Mike sit down and just like distilled Mike Norton over 22 hours for 22 pages? Was it 22
pages? It was 24 pages in 24 hours.
So you took the full 24 hours?
I did. I spent the last 2 hours lettering it, actually.
So
that's
So hold on,
from.
You have to make one page in 24 hours?
No, he did 24 pages.
In
late.
1 hour?
No, 20. It was like an hour a page.
He did a complete comic, drawn, inked, and lettered in 24 hours.
But like when you're 8 years old, we stick figures or just like
It's a little bit like that. Yeah.
Jesus.
We'll call it up after the episode here.
You can take a look
How
at
much
it.
Do
it
they is, pay you? The
no worries.
600
this is for fun.
I'm working on trying to get it monetized.
You
right
should.
Now.
You should sell that.
It's like that was a pretty hard night. I should get paid for
it. I'll show it to you.
It was in this
awesome
city. Nobody wanted me to leave the city before it started. I don't even want to be in the same vicinity where something like that happens. I just like.
You know what? I said that for years. I've said that for years. I watched all these guys, and I didn't even want to do it this year. But for some reason, a couple of people were asking. Burnham was asking me. Then actually, Tim Seeley didn't ask me, but Patrick at Challengers asked
pulling
me,
out second computers.
Actually, I can doodle very quickly, which is like an oddity, but it looks nothing like when I draw it.
I think that's
loose.
The point. It's not just, you're not really making a showcase.
Oh, it looked great, but Burnham, God, Burnham is a freaking animal.
He's
when
a master of the 24-hour comic.
I told Chris, I was like, okay, what you need to do is monetize this in some way. Where like once a month you like, you know, create a website and take suggestions, and once a month you do a 24-hour comic. And he's like, dude, I'm trying to figure out
if he could get paid for that. He would do that totally, because he enjoys doing it. I don't know why
he did a 24-hour or a 24-page story. It was monster trucks versus Martians, and it was awesome.
It was incredible.
Who wrote that?
He did
everything.
That's the thing. In 24 hours, you have to write, draw, and letter a comic in 24 hours. And it is the coolest thing.
I did that, but only once in my life. That's actually when I saw the first Superman movie back in 78.
Mm-hmm. You're a kid.
That means I was 10. I came back home and I drew, maybe 10 pages, maybe. But it took me probably 1 hour.
Nice.
And it ended up with a bad guy being handed by Superman to the cops. And the cops like put him in like one of those like trucks, except it was one of those French truck cops, cop trucks, like, you know, so it was like French cops with a big kepi and all that. And Superman is like, here you go, gentlemen.
He could do that. Sure.
All right.
Well, before we wrap up here and we're getting close
wrap up.
To that.
I really need to pee now.
You're okay. Well, before I let you pee.
Oh, wow.
It's okay. I can hold it. I'm good.
All right.
It's good.
When we've talked in the past, you've had some incredibly awesome stories about Archie Goodwin whenever you first started working at DC. And he's one of those guys that if I have two regrets of people that I would have loved to have talked to on Around Comics that are no longer with us, it's
Jesus.
It's Jesus and it's Will Eisner and Archie Goodwin. And you're one of the long list of people that have said that Archie Goodwin is just one of the greatest people that's ever worked in the industry.
No question about it. Yeah. Archie, I owe him my career in the States. I owe it to him, period. My French publisher was working closely with DC Comics, and at the time, because of a girlfriend who became my first wife, a long story and all that, I came to New York and I was trying to find some work in comics. And because of my French publisher, I got like an introduction at DC Comics. I went to their offices and got to show my drawings. At the time, Phyllis Hume, who was in charge of their like foreign sales, a lovely lady, like really helped me get that appointment. And I met Jim Chadwick, who was in charge of their production at the time, I believe that's what he was doing. And he told me, you know, so I'm waiting like all like, you know, just fresh from France, like in the DC Comics offices, and I'm like with my drawings under my arm. And he's like telling me, well, listen, you know, don't be surprised if it doesn't work out. You know, we don't usually receive people here and all that. So I'm like, sure, absolutely. And I showed my drawings and he's like, do you mind if I call Archie Goodwin? I'm like, what? You know, I didn't say what. I was like, you know, like,
you're right.
I'm like, no, I think it's okay. You
know, no.
So Archie comes back and as always, like the just the sweetest man, just gentleman, like really, like the true meaning of the word, I guess. Like that's just like what he was. And he came, he's like, hello, like very polite, very, very shy. Like so was I. So there were always when we were talking, actually, big moments of silences because both of us were shy and not knowing what to say. Except he was Archie Goodwin, you know what I mean? Just like that's
you shouldn't. He shouldn't be shy.
No. He was like, God, the most unassuming, like interesting, and it's. And he had like all the qualities. He was one of those. I just loved him. It was so sad when he died. He just like, and I haven't worked that long with him or like known him for long and all that, but just enough to get this great feel from him. And so basically, he's the one who told me, oh, yeah, I love what you do. You know, like, would you like to work with us? I'm like, sure. You know, like, that's what I'm here for. So that's how I started to work with DC. And I let him down. We were working on a comic book adaptation of Chris Claremont's novel at the time called First Flight.
I remember that book.
Yeah. And there was like, I was like taking way too long, like on the first pages, I was starting to stall basically. And he gave me one of the best advices ever. He told me, Christian, you know, like if you continue that way, you know, I don't want that to see that, but you're going to starve to death. And that's exactly what happened. I knew when he said it, that's for 10 years after that, it was tough on me. I couldn't like handle like the workload. And but I mean, I'm actually not the one who sank First Flight. I just want to be clear on that. I would have, but that's not what happened. Actually, let me take a second to clear that up, because there's a legend going on. Like, not many people know it, thankfully, but like, I at some point, like Chris and Archie, like got back to me and said, we don't want to adapt the book anymore. We want to make an original series based on the same characters, a mini series. It would be like story arcs of 4 issues. I mean, we would like you to do the first one. So we were going to Brooklyn for lunch with Archie Goodwin, Chris Claremont.
No, you were penciling or inking at that point?
I'm doing both.
Yes. And ink. Oh,
I
wow.
still have, okay. No, I don't have them, but I had like 7 pages, I think, that were done. And they look great when I look back on it. As far as I remember, for me, I think they look great. And anyway, we go to lunch and we all decide, like, very happily that we're going to, like, just do this new miniseries. So the adaptation of the book, I was so slow, but it's all forgotten. I go back home, like, super excited. Chris tells me, I'll have the script for you in July. And it was, we were, I believe, in May or something like that. So I'm working. I was working on a Lobo issue at the time or something like that. And I'm waiting. And then I'm turning down a Batman project, a Legend of the Dark Knight that Archie wanted me to do on the side, like something else. In the meantime, I hear nothing. So at some point in July, like, I go to DC Comics. I meet Stuart Moore, who was at the time working as a Vertigo editor. And I meet him in the offices, and he's like, we start chatting, and for some reason, he's like, you know, I'm going to be the editor of First Flight and that, but they didn't tell you, like, it's been canceled, we're not going to do it. And so that's what happened. I didn't drop the thing. It's like they dropped it without letting me know that it would not happen.
So you
and
didn't,
I know
you
I can,
didn't
I can prove
it
because okay. I managed to blackmail Stuart Moore for all the first issues of Preacher, which I had missed. And he felt so bad that he went to his office. He gave me like all the first issue, like issues of Preacher, which I really wanted to read anyway. So I felt I came out like a head.
You won. All right.
Nice. So sorry about taking so long. Like, yeah, well, you know, sometimes. And now I don't know. I can only read them on the journal. I don't know if you're the same, but do you have time to read the comp list? I always make a selection.
I've got a stack of stuff I need to read. Actually, I got a bookshelf full of stuff I need to read.
Same here. But when I go to the gym, I grab one.
Yeah.
Except it's never the one on top. So I'm like, oh boy. Yeah. I'm trying to pick the one I want.
Oh, man. I have been there. I have not voiced that to anyone.
Oh, shit.
Ever,
I don't want to read that one.
Actually, the moment's passed.
Actually, it sounds more like merde.
All right.
Well, let's wrap this one up. Mike, obviously, we can still see your work in the pages of Green Arrow and Black Canary and Booster Gold. Christian, you are the monthly inker on Green Lantern with Doug Mankey and Jeff Johns. So they're keeping you busy there. So everyone, go out and make sure to support those comics.
Oh, Collected Waiting Place next week.
That's right.
Or is it next week? Or I don't know when this comes out.
It is next week.
IDW?
IDW.
And how much of Waiting Place is being collected in
all
there?
Of it.
All of it.
Plus a new story.
That's my... Listen, Mike's... The Waiting Place is the only comic that my wife had ever picked up. I left a trade out, and she read the first one and then demanded to read the second one and then demanded to read the third one and then said, where's the next one? And I said, there isn't one.
Can I just say that's great because I want my copy and I want to buy it, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
It's like really... the wink, don't wink, you find nudge, just one second, like, don't you find like wife's choices sometimes are very odd? You're trying to tell them, oh, you should read that, I think you like it and all that, and then they come up one day, they pick up on top of the pile something, you're like, oh, I really like,
yeah,
that,
here's the thing,
and that could be whatever.
Listen,
and you're like,
I tried to get my wife to read Fable. I tried to do all the traditional picks. Like, people are like, oh, Fables,
you think
read
she's
this.
She's going to get the girly stuff,
yeah,
for Fables.
And then she picked
sorry,
up,
Andrew.
And then she picked up The Waiting Place, which is pretty much, she's like, oh, she's like, oh, this takes place in Wisconsin, because I'm from Wisconsin, and yeah, we met in college in Wisconsin. So,
ah,
like,
une tête de fromage.
Yeah, so, like, she was like, oh, I
you said something about cheese, didn't you?
She said,
oh,
oh, okay,
it's beautiful. It's good cheese up there. I can't wait to get up there this weekend. Some cheese and beer. And she was like, oh, this takes place in Wisconsin. I'm like, yeah, it takes place like in a small town in Wisconsin. She's like, oh, she read it. And she's like, oh, I like it. It was the first one that, it was like the one that I didn't give her to read. It was the one that she just randomly picked up and was like, but that's true with most things. Like, how many things in life when someone jams it in your
Michelle,
face?
Michelle likes, lately she's been into like the Superman All-Star by Grant Morrison and,
really?
And Frank Wiley. I would have never thought she would be even remotely interested in that. Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to tell her, oh, you should read that. It's great. And we were like signing actually at Challengers like that one time, and she picked that up because she was waiting and bored, and she's like, oh, this is great, this looks beautiful and all that.
She so just kind of picked it up on her own.
Yeah. That's just like the weirdest thing I would have never known.
Maybe I should just lay out my All-Star Superman
just
issues for my wife. I guess it would be that
everything
might be a good
I've
one.
Ever
that
suggested was
you
pretty
should
much
just
universally
wear a
ignored
robe and nothing yeah, else, and let the issue slip out like slowly.
Hey, why don't you read this?
Why is this comic book underneath my pillow? I don't get this.
No reason.
All right. Well, I tell you what. Let's wrap this one up. Thank you, Christian. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you,
Tom.
Chris.
And
thank
V
you.
For Vendetta. She likes V for Vendetta.
My wife, Preacher. Only thing she's ever liked. Weird.
Oh, you should be worried. You should be worried.
Oh, dude,
that's not normal, dude.
Let's feast again like we did last summer. That's in my issue, I swear.
Let's end it now on that.
I want to thank everyone for the patience while we were on vacation. We're rested, recharged, and ready to get back to Comic Book Talk. So this was a great first episode back. And want to thank everyone once again for all the support with Windy City Comic Con and your continued support with Around Comics. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, everyone.
And we'll be back.
Merci.
Merci.
Exactly.
Afghanistan.
Oui.
Paracalo. Oui. Merci.
I know no French.
I'll give you props, audience.
Now, what's French for cheesehead again?
Tête de fromage.
There you go.
It's God's country up there. I can't wait to get back up. I only feel normal when I'm back in Wisconsin. It's the only time I feel it. I can drink and shoot. I went trap shooting. I'll tell you guys afterwards.
You can drink and shoot? Shoot what?
Clay pigeons. It was.
Ah, jeez, another American gun-toting capitalist petit bourgeois.
Well, you'd be speaking German if it wasn't for us.
Listen, when I shot the clay pigeons, there was no money that dropped out
and
of them.
And you'd still drink tea if it wasn't for us. So, you know, it's like,
oh, he went back.
Oh, damn, you went 1700s on us.
Wow, right. That was a good one.
All right, we'll be back again next Monday. Actually, we'll be back later this week with our JLA Avengers Book Club episode, so check that out. And then we'll have our next regular Around Comics episode on Monday. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
And around
comics.
I said that like a robot, we'll like Doug Mankey draws. Around comics. Everywhere in around.
Oh, man, I'm in trouble.
Oh, no, you're out. He's running here right now.
Just a determined look on his face.
From Minnesota.
Like that Terminator in Judgment Day. He's just like.
A 20-hour run. I can take it. Cross the border, steady your boats, arms to shoulder, till tides all pull, our holy ground's making this call, harbor now. Home. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.
trace of all.